Hey, and welcome back to The Ed Show. This is episode number 137. 137 of the episodes that we're going through so far. And if you remember last time I was on a little while ago, we had Drew McDaniel coming on talking about a bunch of different things, and he mentioned that he was going to come back and talk about premium storage. Before he comes back with that, I've located one of his colleagues, Canis Qua,
yep,
who's coming back here because he actually introduced D-Series machines.
That's right.
From the Azure VM world. And you're going to talk about servicing updates and maintenance on Azure and
That
means for the regular, everyday IT pro, LANamin, SysAmin folks that actually use Azure every day. So tell me a little bit about what the existing environment's like. Like, what are we faced with right now?
So planned maintenance updates today happen when we need to update the underlying host machine that is hosting all of your virtual machines to mm-hmm. make it more secure, to make it more performant. And today, that is a pretty painful process for our customers, that they're not able to understand really what happened to their VM mm-hmm. because it just sort of randomly shuts down. And they have no way to find out after the fact that the reboot that happened is attributed to that actual planned maintenance update that we did to actually improve the performance of those VMs.
Okay, so this can kind of translate in the on-premises world as being we're updating and patching the hypervisor
yep,
box
absolutely.
Itself, and all the VM guests are unaware of the fact that that's actually happening. But we know it's happening because we're the admins that are doing it all.
Correct.
But this is on the much larger scale across all the data centers we're talking about here in the Azure world.
Yep.
Okay. So what's new in that world? Because I know my VMs that are up there, a lot of them in a lab environment or demo environments, I don't really care if they kind of go up and down, but obviously for people that run workloads in Azure
yep.
and workloads up in IaaS, this is a really extremely important
Definitely.
Topic.
Definitely. We hear customer feedback all the time about how painful this process is for them and how we need to really improve and make sure that customers not only are aware of the kinds of reboots that are happening to their VMs, mm-hmm. but also just to reduce that number of reboots that are actually impacting those customers. So to that end, there are a number of improvements that were made across the platform to actually reduce the number of reboots mm-hmm. that are impacting these customer VMs. But for the set of updates that actually do need to take down that host machine and bring up those VMs again, we've made some improvements in order to allow customers to understand whether their VM was rebooted due to a planned maintenance event mm-hmm. and how they can find out that information.
Okay. Now, this is obviously complementary to architecting a solution where you design for fault domains, you design for update domains,
yep.
stuff like that, try to minimize this as well. Even when that's in place, this is the stuff that happens in the background.
Correct.
Okay. Yep. So what kind of stuff is new that's coming up there right now?
Yep. So if you go to your management portal, you'll be able to see the VM reboot events that happen to your virtual machine.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the cloud service that your VM is hosted under, and just go to the dashboard, there's a new link here that says View Reboot Logs.
Oh, okay.
That you can click, and you can query for all of the reboot events that happened in a certain time period. And you may notice that there are no reboot logs here. And that is both a good thing and a bad thing.
Okay.
We released this feature toward the end of last year.
Okay.
And so we actually haven't done a reboot since then across the whole platform.
Mm-hmm.
The next one will be coming in a number of weeks or months. And at that point in time, those reboot events will be surfaced in this in the portal.
And for the next round of them that are coming out that happens, obviously try to minimize these, obviously,
right.
because it's impactful to everybody. This is also part of just the regular email that would be going out saying to the servicing going on.
Yep.
You'll get some notification that's going to be happening in advance, but besides just finding these logs right now?
Right. So you'll be able to get customers will be able to get emails to their admin email account that we have on file,
mm-hmm.
And we'll notify them that a reboot's coming.
Okay. And you don't have any actual one to show us what it looks like in this particular demo VM because it's been around for such a short period of time? Or?
Well, so from our testing, we have been able to create some synthetic events.
Okay.
And but in a very artificial sort of way, we have this. We have also an API interface that you can get these results back, as well as a PowerShell client tool
mm-hmm.
that you can get the same information. This is an example of the API request that you might send I've done the demo in PowerShell, but you can do it through programmatically.
Yeah.
And get, and this is an example of what the response body might look like. Mm-hmm. So you see that you have, you know, your, this is the VM that got rebooted, and the reboot reason is that the virtual machine was rebooted due to a plant maintenance event. Mm-hmm. It also tells you when that reboot actually happened. And so you can know for sure that the reboot that you identified was actually due to something that the Azure platform was doing rather than your own application.
For instance. Okay.
Same thing with the PowerShell demo that you're able to, we have a PowerShell commandlet that you can just get these reboot reasons directly from your PowerShell client.
Okay, so the get Azure deployment event and the name of your cloud service and other particular information will tell you that as well.
Yeah, that's right. Oh,
that's easy. Wow, that's really easy. I like that. I like that a lot. So I can run that command or other commands against a subset of machines or all the machines
yep.
in my different accounts, be able to find stuff. And obviously, because it's PowerShell, you can go off and modify this to even go through and format tables, dump
exactly.
them to CSV files, and be able to massage data in whatever way you want.
Absolutely.
And use it whichever way you want. Very cool stuff. And this is available right now. And that little graphical icon inside the management portal
yep.
is the visible view of it if you're not a PowerShell person.
Yep.
And this basically complements the service notification that you have with the regular email service. Very cool. Well, thanks, man.
Yeah.
That was
Thank
easy.
You.
Nice, and, nice and painless for you know, whenever someone mentions reboots or servicing, I always kind of get your back up as far as this, but this will go a long way to be able to help our communication for what's going on with the different systems.
That's right.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
We got Drew coming up next. I want to do a quick little swap out. Stay tuned right after the break and bring on Drew McDaniel. And we're back. I promise you we get Drew McDaniel back again. We had him on about a month ago talking about the G-Series machines.
Absolutely.
And then you promise you're going to give us a more depth conversation around premium storage.
Absolutely.
Well, kick it off, my friend.
All right. So thank you, Rick. So premium storage, in fact, this is really a set of things we're doing to really scale up on the Azure platform.
Mm-hmm.
The Azure platform, since the day it was released, really allows for a great scale-out solution. You can keep spinning up multiple VMs. I mean, that's really the power of the cloud.
Great.
But for certain customers, they're looking to bring their largest applications to Azure. And one of the things that they're looking to do in that case is actually have higher performance storage. And so we want to talk through premium storage. The VMs associated with premium storage is actually more than just the storage that's changed fairly dramatically. This is something that is in preview right now.
Mm-hmm.
We're taking customers in. We're taking several hundred customers a day, ramping that up. And so we're getting some really great feedback on that. And I really want to give people an opportunity to see what we have today so that if you already are using premium storage and you're in the preview, you can play with this. And if you haven't, then you want to definitely sign up for the preview under the preview features. And then when you get in, you can actually see some of the great things you'll be able to do with premium storage.
Okay, so basically whenever you're at the Azure portal or you're working with the Azure website, in case you don't know, you can actually go to preview features and then select this one here.
Exactly.
And then basically you're placed on a waiting list. And we're progressing through those right now?
We're progressing through the waiting list. We're taking them in the order that they came in. So we initially started the waiting list beginning of December.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were taking in, like I said, a couple hundred customers a day as we ramp this up and as we build these out across the globe. Currently we have premium storage in our US East 2 data center, our US West data center, and our West Europe data center. And
okay.
And that's going to continue to expand both the capacity there in those locations and around the world as we roll this out further into the preview and towards general availability.
Okay, so from a layperson's perspective, I want to spin up a new machine and have it access to working with premium storage. They have to be inside one of those regions, basically, right?
Correct.
Okay.
So let me show you how this actually works in the portal.
Yep.
A couple things here. We've actually got two portals up here. So the portal that people are most familiar with is this existing Azure portal. But we also have a new preview portal, and you can get to it a couple ways. Probably the easiest is by selecting your name up here under your name badge, and you can click over to switch to new portal. And that's going to bring you up into this preview portal, preview badge on here. Very slick portal, allows you to configure so I can customize what I see here. I've got the service health showing all green check marks, so
mm-hmm.
meaning all the services are running really well in Azure. But you can customize. I've added virtual machines. Working virtual machines, I end up spending a lot of time there. I've added a marketplace here as well. So this is a great thing to actually deploy a premium storage. We're just going to walk through. Similar to the old portal, you actually have the plus button to create something new. A lot of different options here, as you can see, websites and databases, projects. We both have third-party stuff. For example, New Relic is a third-party offering available. So just a wide variety in the portal now, and will continue to grow.
Yeah. Now these guys are, I think we're calling these templates, right? They're basically things that people have built or that we've made available with our partners that are specific to their particular offerings.
Exactly, right. Exactly. And so, you know, and actually, if we come in here to the everything, it'll take us directly to the marketplace. Oh, okay. And here's a slew of templates that you can do. Let me actually just click on the everything. So we've got Docker for containerization. You can spin up an IBM database. Even down here, you can spin up an entire SharePoint farm or DataStax deployment, all with these templates. Right. Very, very slick. But specifically, we want to kind of dive into the premium storage. Now, with premium storage, actually, why don't we click over? We're going to just do a Windows Server VM.
And this obviously works with any of our guests that we have available.
Correct. Premium storage works with any of our base operating systems, both Windows and Linux.
Right.
Now, we'll select one of these. We'll actually start off with 2012 R2. Now, premium storage is, we talk about premium storage, but it's more than just premium storage. In fact, we've changed our storage infrastructure. We've changed the compute infrastructure, so caching layer, and we'll dig into that. We've also changed and modified the networking so that you have a low latency between the storage and the compute units. So there's a pretty massive change through the system. Mm-hmm. And this shows up through multiple different pieces. So if you're creating a machine, first come in here and configure the name and pricing tier. As this loads up, why don't we just click and jump in from the base here and make sure we can get a good machine running.
Yeah.
See if this loads up a little faster. There we go. I did mention this is a preview portal, so some things are, and in fact, as we look into this, there's some things that are still coming online in this, and some things, there's definitely a lot of optimization improving on this. And in fact, if you think about a UI, it really is important to get the flows right and the user model right, and you know, some of the performance will definitely come as we go forward in here. Okay. We're going to let this load, and so I tell you what. So what I've created, I've configured a set of machines already.
Yeah.
A set of machines here for premium storage. So the premium storage VMs are called DS VMs, or the DS series of VMs. And so I've got a couple DS VMs that I wanted to show you specifically some interesting things here. Now, when it comes to the VMs, typically, when we create a OS disk and you have a set of data disks, we always recommend putting your data on the data disk. It's actually designed for higher performance. In existing standard storage, we just generally recommend customers to have the default configuration, which is no caching. Mm-hmm. This is just because the performance of the back-end storage system can actually provide more performance than the caching that's based in the original VM size. However, with DS, as I mentioned, we've actually reworked our caching layer. We've reworked compute. So now caching is much, much more efficient. In fact, one of the reasons why you can only do the premium storage on the D series is that's a series that has SSD. So we built our cache to specifically handle SSD.
So when you're looking at provisioning a machine, you keep referring to this as a DS machine. It's like it's a D series machine, but it's got the S moniker because it has the ability to attach up to premium storage?
Yes, it's optimized for the premium storage.
So you demystify some of the names sometimes.
Exactly. So if you're in here and it's still not loading, but when you click into this pricing tier, it'll actually show you a set of D1 through 14,
okay.
And it'll be following that a DS 1 through 14.
Yeah.
The key thing is you need to select West Europe, West US, or East US 2 as one of the locations for those sizes to show up for you.
No problem.
Okay, so once you have that, now with the premium storage, the actual caching is makes a big difference. Read caching is really recommended for things where it would make sense you're going to write something and then read it back. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about like a SQL workload, it's normally your database files. Mm-hmm. The no caching is really optimized for something where you're probably not reading the data. You're mostly writing, and so like the log files on the database.
Okay.
And I'll jump into the machine and kind of show you why that makes a difference. So here's our machine. And so what we've got here is a set of disks, as we're just looking at. There's one, scroll up here. So we've got the normal temporary storage, the ephemeral storage. I've got two disks configured for read caching, and I have one disk configured for write caching. Now, you'll notice here these disks are almost a terabyte sized disk. Mm-hmm. With premium storage, the performance of the backend storage increases as you go into an increased disk size. So we have a P10 is what we're calling it, which is anything up to 128 gigs that gives you 500 IOPS per second,
right,
and 100 megabytes per second. And then it goes up, and the terabyte size can deliver up to 5,000 IO operations per second.
Okay.
So let me show you how we're going to do that. So Iometer is a tool we use here. This is something you can download from iometer.org, a freely available tool. You can use this on Linux. You can use this on Windows. It really allows you to control a set of parameters to really see the overall performance of both the caching system and the disks back in, mm-hmm. in the back end. So what we're doing here is we're actually going to hit Iometer with an E drive, the read cache here, read cache drive. We're going to hit it with a workload that's small I.O., so 8 KB I.O., 90% read. So we're actually going to leverage the caching capability pretty extensively here. So if we kick this off, we're going to start this test. And we'll show you pretty quick. So now you see we've got right around the 5,000 I/O operations per second, right, as expected. And we'll notice that the latency, so the latency is the time it takes to send an I/O operation from the compute machine to the storage and get a response. And so that latency sets around 2 milliseconds for each I/O to complete.
Okay.
Now it's important to think about this though, that you know the I/O operations is IOs per second. And the latency is the time it takes each I/O to complete. And so latency really comes into play here. If you think about if the latency was 10 milliseconds and you were executing those sequentially, only one at a time, mm-hmm. in a single second, you'd be able to do 100 I/O operations.
Right.
That 100 times 10 would equal 1,000, which is 1 second. So the response time is critical in a workload. The other thing that's kind of critical here, and this tool allows us to configure, is the number of outstanding I/O operations. So if you see here, this tool allows us to configure 10 outstanding I/O operations. And so if your workload is able to issue multiple IOs in parallel, then it actually is able to get to a higher number of I/O operations at 5,000 as compared to being limited. In this case, if we only were doing one at a time, 2 milliseconds, we'd see about 500 IOs done. Going to 10. 5,000.
Right.
So it is very important that the premium storage is not necessarily complete magic, and it will be a little dependent on the workload and the overall number of I/O operations that you see.
I mean, you're just going through some very standard best practices when you're evaluating any kind of a storage subsystem. Like if this was an SMB3 share off of a file server or testing a local NAS or a local SAN device, you would still have to kind of go through these types of things as well.
Exactly. Same thing you'd be dealing with working with the hardware on premises.
Okay. Good to know.
Okay, so now, as we saw, the read cache was delivering the 5,000 IOPS in around 1 to 2 milliseconds. Now, let's say we change this up when we're going to change the access specification. Instead of doing primarily a read workload, we're going to go to 100% write. Now, at 100% write, we actually see still the 5,000 IOPS, and I'll jump up there. The IOPS dropped down. The reason the IOPS dropped down is our latency, our time to complete each operation, is about 4.5 milliseconds.
So it's almost double, it's just over double.
Just over double. So it's actually writing. Now, as I've mentioned before, the caching is now what makes a difference. So here we're actually doing writes as going into the cache, getting persistent in the cache, and back into the storage and coming through. If your workload is, for that specific disk, is primarily writes, and this happens for a database, you have a log file that is mm-hmm. your primary writes, and you have your database files and your temp files that are either, temp can be non-persistent on ephemeral storage, but your database files is on persistent storage. But so here we're looking about 4.5. If we were to change this, and we're going to do that same access specification, we're going to move this over to the no caching drive. Here we're going to kick this off. And now we see it's not, you know, dramatic. It didn't come down to the 2 milliseconds. But now we've got about a half to a full millisecond of improvement on the write latency moving to the no caching. So this is why you really want to configure the drives for the appropriate workload. So in the write logs, you definitely want to have it for no caching. And then for the database files, you want to do it for persistent caching. And for the temp database, you may actually want to use ephemeral storage.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So this is showing, you know, on a single machine, a single disk, a set of different options. Now, what you can do, though, we've also got a machine provisioned. So here what I've done is I take the same DSVM, it's a DS14, our largest D-series of VM, and I've striped across 20 disks to create one large volume. Now this allows us to aggregate the number of I/O operations that we're able to get off of the machine. Again, we're going to use the same read level operation, the 90% read, and now we're going to hit the system, and now we should see, actually let me just bring this up in the big dial. So now we're looking at almost 50,000 I/O operations per second across those disks.
And you just made a storage space as an example on server 2012 R2.
That's exactly
that allows
right.
you to gang all these disks together and make them appear to the OS as if it's a single disk.
Correct.
Right.
And as I mentioned before, so this is again workload dependent, I did increase the number of outstanding I/O operations per second. So again, your mileage will vary. You want to play with this, put it together with the workload, and see, you know, optimize for the number of disks, the number of IOPS that you can achieve with that specific workload.
And then you set the caching option when you create the disk inside the portal or through PowerShell, whether or not it's going to have different characteristics of cache. Correct.
Correct. You set it when you create the disk.
Right.
In the preview portal, you'll be able to configure that. You can change it after the fact. Mm-hmm. Currently, that's not showing up in the preview portal. You can use PowerShell to change it after the fact. And in fact, you can change it while the VM is running.
Okay.
Now, so that's really nice. It's a scale up. We're getting some great performance. As I said, we're getting a lot of customers in the preview being very, very happy. I mean, this is, you know, considerably better than our general purpose storage that's available today. However, you may want to go bigger. So let's say you want to go larger than that. I did mention that we have the big boy, our G series, that's recently been introduced.
Oh, this is the G5.
This is the G5. And in fact, here we were showing we've got 32 physical cores in this machine being surfaced into that machine. This really is the largest VM in the public cloud today. We've got some competitors that offer a VM that has 36 cores, but if you really dig into their information, it's really 18 cores that are running hyper-threaded, so it's okay. 18 cores masquerading as 36.
Yep.
We're not kidding around here, this is 32 physical cores.
Mm-hmm.
We're also looking at almost a half terabyte of physical RAM.
Right.
And then this thing here also has a massive amount of local disk space. And so here, what we've got is, I've got the temporary storage. This is over 6 terabytes of local ephemeral storage that you can use on
okay.
your machine.
So that's the temporary storage.
That's the temporary storage. Yeah. If you stripe together for persistent storage, and here I've striped together multiple drives, I'm looking at over 64 terabytes of persistent storage on this.
So in case you're wondering, doing the math calculation, remember I did this for a presentation a little while ago, it's 13 cents a minute. Retail pricing to be able to run this guy for the G5, but he's got some serious horsepower.
Now, so this VM is not yet configured for premium storage. It will be shortly.
Okay.
But what we wanted to show off here is that massive amount of temporary. And not only is it large, the thing is fast. So we've got a configuration here. Here we're going to hit the temporary storage.
So it's the local disk that's temporary. It's the 7 terabyte one or 6 terabyte.
6 terabytes,
one.
Yes. Almost 7 terabytes. Yeah. Well, close to 7 terabytes. Similar doing eight small I/O against this, and we'll kick this guy off.
And that was a 50% read and random stuff?
It's 50% read and write. It's about consistent with an SSD, the reads versus write. And we'll bring up the dial tone here. Look at that. We're looking at 103,000 I/O operations
okay.
per second running off this thing. So I said, this big boy can really work.
It's like, who needs to provision physical hardware anymore with this kind of stuff?
The thing is, you can spin this up on demand as you need it, yeah. run the workloads that you need, and spin them back down. I mean, the cloud is your friend.
I know that I was having a conversation with a customer that's looking at using something like the G-Series here for doing big data stuff. And the way that they currently do big data is they got to bring the data down to the machine to process it. And so that's where this big six and change terabyte drive makes a lot of sense for being able to do a lot of read actions on that.
Absolutely. I mean, and that was what we were hearing from customers mm-hmm. that need to bring the big data workload to actually process that very, very fast, very efficiently. That's what this thing does for you.
Nice. So provisioning this, you can provision this all through using PowerShell if you want to. You can also use the new portal when the new portal isn't kind of little hung like it is right now, but that's, you know, the par for the course for preview, right?
And the G-Series is available on both portals today.
Okay.
G-Series also currently deployed in West US and East US too.
Okay.
And again, that will be rolling out to more locations. G-Series is full GA, and so everybody has access to that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to sign up and get in line for the G-Series.
And good, that also works both on the Windows platform and Linux platform.
Absolutely.
There's no difference for what kind of guest OS you're running.
Yeah, the G-Series, one specific thing that you want to call out here, we didn't talk about here, but the G-Series actually has a much larger network interface card.
Yeah.
It uses a technology called receive-side scaling.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a blog post on this, but if you come in and you want to configure the network interface card, and actually we're going to show you real quick here on how to do this on Windows, to use... Hold on 1 second. If we look at the network interface card in the adapter settings, you actually have, it's a little bit buried in here. As again, there's a post on this. Receive side scaling, by default that would be disabled. You want to enable this. This is a virtualization technique to allow the NIC to do more of the work.
Right.
And that will leverage, this thing has a, it can get up to 40 gigabits per second
mm-hmm.
in the network card, but you really need to enable receive side scaling. It's a configuration in Windows. In Linux, it's baked into the images, and at this point in time, all of the most current images for the Linux distributions will have receive side scaling
right.
enabled.
And that's the same type of thing you have to do on the Windows physical side of things back in your on-premises environment,
exactly.
too, if I remember correctly, from my networking days in 2012
yes.
And that sort of stuff. Well, that's awesome, man. That's quite a large coverage of swath of stuff for premium storage. I wasn't aware of the differences between the different implementations of premium storage, the 10, what did you call it, the P10, the P...
P10, P20, and P30.
Yeah.
So for disks up to 128 gig, is the P10, disks up to 512 gig is the P20, and then all the way up to a terabyte for the P30.
And obviously, we didn't talk about this yet, but when you provision this, there will be different costs associated with those as well. We don't know what the cost is yet because it's in preview mode.
Correct.
But when it goes GA, there'll be more details about pricing and when it comes final.
And the cost do the price per gig comes down as you go to a larger store size disk as you tend to expect.
Okay. And in case you missed it at the very beginning, if you don't currently have access to premium storage right now, there is in preview form a sign up to be able to go to, and we are working our way through all those. As fast as we can,
as
capacity allows and as support's able to go. But don't forget to sign up for that, and you will be able to have that activated on your accounts, hopefully in the near future.
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks, man. I appreciate
Thank you
stopping
much,
by
Rick.
and talking to us about premium storage.
It's great to be able to talk a little bit about how we scale this puppy up.
It's that G5. I love it, man.
That's slick. It's
absolutely love it from where that is. What did you guys think about this particular episode? Why don't you leave us a comment down below there if you're interested to let us know how we're doing. Also, maybe suggest some additional topics of future episodes. We're talking about the Azure world, that sort of stuff. I actually happen to maintain a post in case you're interested in all the recent Azure news that happened over the last month or so. You can see that one there at aka.ms/AzureITPro in case you're interested. And you can reach us on the Twitters if you're interested. The Edge Show has the Twitter handle of @TNEdge. You can reach me at @RicksterCDN. And if I remember correctly, you guys really follow closely the forums online for feedback about different things.
Absolutely. The forums and various blog posts.
Yep.
Give us comments. We'll jump into those and respond.
Right. So in case you don't know about that one there, that's simply going off to, if I remember correctly, it's forums.azure.com. And then you guys look after a bunch of different forums, but the main one you look at is the virtual machine
virtual
forum
machines. Absolutely.
As an example for some feedback. Thanks a lot for watching. We'll catch you coming up next week. But with that, I'm going to say adieu and have a good day.